Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. The information we present is taken from the writings of Benjamin Krem, a disciple of a Master of Wisdom, and also from teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. We include teachings from many schools of thought to demonstrate how they are working out in the world. Our articles are often inspiring. We hope to inform the public of actions taken around the globe to improve conditions for us all and to find means of addressing some of our most pressing problems.
Good morning and welcome to the program, which was prepared by David and Teresa from the Wellington Group. Today we present the third and final part in our series on UFOs and their spiritual mission. Our first article is part of a talk given by Benjamin Krem at the Transmission Meditation Conference held near San Francisco in August 2009. Mr. Krem begins, "There is an enormous amount of information of one kind or another about UFOs. Some of it is true, absolutely authentic, and masses of it which is utterly unreal and unauthentic. This is a huge and all-important subject."
In 1953, an Englishman named Desmond Leslie wrote a book titled Flying Saucers Have Landed. He was a gifted man who wrote plays, novels and music, a cousin of Winston Churchill. Having written this book, he heard about an extraordinary man living in the US called George Adamski, who had written an article in which he claimed that he was in touch with people from other planets. Adamski said that a group of observers could vouch for his meeting with a man from Venus. And it goes that one day, by arrangement, in November 1952, Adamski went into the desert near Desert Center in California. The group of observers stayed a few hundred yards away and viewed the scene through binoculars. A spacecraft landed, of the type that flew along the commercial planes in the 1940s and 50s. According to Adamski, a man came out of the spacecraft dressed in a one-piece suit. He talked to Adamski without using language, at least not immediately, but made him understand what he had to say. In fact, they had a telepathic rapport. The man who said he came from Venus was wearing shoes, the soles of which were cut in such a way as to leave clear and pronounced impressions in the desert sand, which were later photographed by the group who were watching from a distance. The word was put out that a man from Venus had landed in a spacecraft. Leslie heard about this incident and wrote to Adamski, suggesting that Adamski add his sighting report in the desert to the book that he had already written about the history of flying saucers down the ages.
Leslie's book claimed that flying saucers from other planets had been visiting Earth for thousands of years, and that there were many descriptions of these craft and artifacts on Earth that lent weight to his claim. Leslie and Adamski together published the book Flying Saucers Have Landed, that was in 1953, and it became a bestseller. Thousands of copies were sold all over the world. The book was taken up in a big way by the so-called New Age movement, especially in America, sometimes to its benefit and sometimes to its detriment. Adamski became famous in many parts of the world. He went on a series of lecture tours in the US, South America, Europe and elsewhere, talking about the spacecraft.
In 1955, Adamski published another book, a much longer account titled Inside the Spaceships. In that book, he gave an account of having been taken up in a small scout craft, a saucer-type craft, to a huge mothership. Inside the mothership, he was introduced to extraordinary people and given profound teachings by a major figure on the ship, a teacher from Venus. This teaching is profoundly transforming and closely resembles Maitreya's teachings. It is, in different words perhaps, like the teaching of Maitreya when he talks about the nature of humanity as a kingdom, how we are all one world, and the need for sharing justice and right relationship, and above all, the necessity that there should be no more war. This is emphasized over and over again in the teachings given by both Maitreya and the Venusian teacher.
Adamski, a straightforward, genial individual, brought this teaching back home and made it known. It fits together perfectly with the core of New Age teaching, which came from Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, Elena Rurich, and Alice A. Bailey, and gave an entirely different view to humanity coming out of the war. The effects of the war were still being felt very strongly in Europe, Japan, and Russia, and people were just beginning to pick up the threads of civilization again. They were looking for meaning and purpose, for guidance in the restructuring of the world. The United Nations was formed, and in it was embedded the creed of the rights of men and women everywhere. The United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, that is. The world gradually faced up to the problems that had accrued as the result of the war, the poverty of Germany, which was shattered by the Allies, the extraordinary damage and loss of life that had occurred in Russia, which set back the Russian people from their desire to create a new society after the terrible struggle with Nazism. After the war, America created the Marshall Plan, its greatest act in many decades. The Marshall Plan transformed European industry, supplying Europe, especially West Germany, with the newest and best applications of industry that America, despite the war, had been able to create throughout the war years.
Then came two traumatic events. Berlin was divided into four zones, the Russian, American, British, and French. In 1961, the Russians blocked their zone, making free passage between Eastern and Western Berlin impossible. America and Russia had been allies in the war against Nazism from 1939 to 1945, but became enemies in the most extraordinary ways. America held on to its idea, if not complete, of democracy, and Russia to its idea, if not the reality, of communism. Each held fanatically to these two ideas and brought the world to a point closer than it had ever been to a Third World War. These two major powers had just emerged from the second part of the two great wars of the 20th century and in 1961 stood at loggerheads.
What few people know is that President Kennedy did not bring about the cessation of hostility between Russia and America at that time. It was brought about by the space brothers of our own solar system, chiefly from Mars and Venus. They are masters of energy, as can be seen in the exploration of space by the UFOs. They have a control of energy such as we do not even know is possible, and were able to nullify the tension between the Americans and Russians. President Kennedy was advised by a Venusian agent living on Earth to approach the Russians in a certain way, which he did, up to a point. He did it in his own American way, but he did it. And in the meantime, the Space Brothers completely removed the energy from the situation and the crisis passed. That was the nearest point since the war to a breakout of a Third World War and was only prevented by the Space Brothers.
In October 1962, there was another point at which the world came close to a Third World War. In September 1962, the Soviet government secretly delivered nuclear missiles to Cuba. When United States intelligence discovered the weapons, the US government did all it could to ensure the removal of the missiles. Then, in October, the Russians chose to call America's bluff to see what it would do by sending a ship loaded to the gunwales with more nuclear missiles across the Atlantic to deliver to Cuba, so that they would be on America's doorstep. The Russians made no attempt to camouflage them this time, so anyone could see they were missiles. It was an answer to America, a provocative attempt by Russia to say, "You have surrounded Russia with missiles from Alaska to Pakistan," which America had done and still does. Pakistan is an American base and has been for years. From there, as well as from the southern border of Russia up to Alaska, Russia is completely surrounded by the missile bases of America and has been since the 1960s.
President Kennedy, for a second time, made an announcement. He had been told by the Space Brothers through an agent in the U.S. Diplomatic Service what to say. He did more or less say what he had been asked to say, but again in his own way, rather than in the way he was asked to say it. As he had been asked at the time of the Berlin crisis, President Kennedy was again asked to speak to the Russians with respect and understanding, saying that he could clearly see their concerns and would seek to allay their fears. Instead, he was very outspoken and challenged Russia. I do not believe the Russians had any intention of continuing to deliver their missiles to Cuba. I do not believe they were so foolish, so lacking in insight, to think that they could do this without being stopped. Certainly the Cubans had no wish to be obliterated from the face of the earth. So the ship turned back, as Russia, I am sure, had expected it to do in any case. That was the second time the Space Brothers had to intervene very strongly to bring about a cessation of animosity. They do this by energy, by nullifying the negative forces, allaying the fears of the people, and bringing about the possibility of a truce, a state in which new things can grow. This is how the Space Brothers have worked all along.
Likewise, President George W. Bush, when he was in office, was informed by such an agent in the diplomatic service that there would be an attack on America, the White House, the Pentagon, and major buildings, which came to pass on 9/11. They were warned 3 months in advance of this event and did nothing about it. That is the extraordinary thing, the difference between President Kennedy and Bush. Bush was told not to react to the events of 9/11. Of course, the first thing he did was to react immediately in the wrong way, and he declared an impossible war against terrorism, which has soured international relations ever since. He discolored his 8 years of office by invading Afghanistan and Iraq, and he turned America from a reasonably open democratic society to a near-fascist state. The Space Brothers do not believe in confrontation. The advice given to the people of Earth is to solve all disputes by cooperation rather than confrontation, seeing the other point of view and taking the spiritual path rather than the path of war. That is the nature of the Space Brothers. That is why they are so evolved, why they have this extraordinary technology that is so far ahead of our own and never have wars. They are way above that and have nothing but peace and goodwill for humanity.
Humanity lives not only in the solar system, but also throughout the whole of cosmos. There is nowhere you can go in cosmos where you will not find human beings. There are people on all the planets of our solar system. The masters of our planet are in touch with the masters of the various planets, and the solar system acts as a unit. The planets are not isolated, but are in contact moment to moment, and they evolve together. If one falls behind, as this planet has done, it causes concern for the others. The beings in the UFOs, from whatever planet, mainly Mars and Venus, but others too, have a tremendous task in working to eliminate or at least reduce pollution. Pollution is the greatest threat to humanity, especially nuclear fission radiation. More deaths are caused by it than by any other cause. It brings about the breakdown of our immune systems and therefore opens us to all sorts of illnesses to which we would otherwise be immune. The space people are concerned with keeping this planet habitable. They go through our skies mopping up and neutralizing large amounts of the nuclear waste and the general toxic filth that we pour into the atmosphere. They are not allowed by karmic law to clean up the planet completely, but within karmic limits they do so. Otherwise, life on this planet would be very painful indeed. More people would be dying than are already dying. More people would be suffering from Alzheimer's, and daily we would be more and more asphyxiated. So we owe the Space Brothers a tremendous debt. It is obvious, therefore, that far from being alien, malicious monsters to be feared as they have often been presented to the public, the Space Brothers are on a spiritual mission to help in every way possible within the laws of karma to maintain the stability and future health of planet Earth.
We'd like to close today with an article by Benjamin Krem's master titled The Gathering of the Forces of Life, which was originally published in Share International magazine in March 2007. And it begins, "Important events are taking place in many parts of the world. People everywhere will be astonished by the reports. These will include sightings in unprecedented numbers of spacecraft from our neighbouring planets, Mars and Venus in particular. Nothing like this increased activity over vast areas of the Earth will have been seen before. Those who have steadfastly refused to take seriously the reality of this phenomenon will find it difficult to deny. More and more accounts of contact with the occupants of spacecraft will add their testimony to the fact of their existence. Miraculous happenings of all kinds will continue and multiply in number and variety. The minds of men will be baffled and amazed by these wonders, and this will cause them to ponder deeply. Into this wonderful, wondering world, Maitreya will quietly enter and begin his open work. He will be asked to counter their doubts and fears, to explain these happenings, and he will vouchsafe their validity. These extraordinary events will continue unabated and cause many to prophesy the ending of the world. Maitreya, however, will continue in his simple way and interpret differently these events.
Thus will Maitreya encourage men to see the marvelous breadth and scope of life, the many layers of which man knows but little till now. Gently, he will introduce them bit by bit to the basic truths of our existence, the laws which govern it, and the benefits achieved by living within these laws. He will acquaint man with the vastness of our galaxy and show that in time, men of Earth will conquer space and time. He will encourage men to seek within as well as without for the answers to their problems and validate their constant connection to each other and to cosmos. He will remind humanity of its long history and of the many perils which man has overcome. He will sow the seeds of faith in our own illustrious future and vouchsafe the eternal divinity of man. He will show that the path of life, the evolutionary journey, leads unfailingly upwards as well as forever onwards, and that to make the journey together as brothers and sisters is the surest way and the way most lit by joy. Look then for the signs of Maitreya's entrance. Make it known and uplift the hope of your brothers."
So that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening in. If you'd like more information on the subject of the program today or regarding Maitreya and other related subjects, we would recommend checking out the website share-international.org. Otherwise, feel free to write to us at sharenz@yahoo.com. Love and blessings to you all.